I believe the official ending time is 3:50. So my question is, should I stop at 3:50 because I can do that? Or should I go a little bit over if I have anything left to say, which I might? Show of hands, I'm trying to think, which way should we do this?
I think you're wasting time, right?
Screw it. You're totally welcome to leave at 3:50 whether I keep talking or not. Okay.
I'll leave at 4.
We'll be out by 4, no question. I'm going to cover everything else. Okay, so far, I've introduced the problem, and I've talked about physical and particularly frequentist probability theories. And it's been apparent that I think frequentist is unsatisfactory. So what's the alternative? The alternative is evidential probability. And this holds that probability, still a real number between 0 and 1, blah, 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 is a property of the observer or the agent or the subject. And it represents a degree of belief. It represents how certain I am of something. It represents the fact that I believe that this will happen most of the time, as opposed to that it will happen most of the time. The advantage of this is that it allows you to apply the word probability almost everywhere. The definition is weak. The definition is broad and elastic. I can always have beliefs about things. The canonical example of where the two theories of probability differ is in statements like, I will die of cancer within the next 20 years. The frequentist says, that statement cannot be assigned a probability. I cannot say, what's the probability that I will die of cancer? Now, what the frequentist would say is, if you tell me what collective I'm a member of, then we can talk about the probability that I will die. Because that collective is sufficiently large, right? So at this point, I'm going to relax my mathematical and logical objections to the difference between sufficiently large and infinitely large. And I'm going to adopt a weaker notion of frequentism that I think all practicing frequentists use, which is I have a large collection of events. And within that collection of events, some number of them are X, and some number of them are not X. And now I have a finite relative frequency. As a mathematical foundation for a rigorous theory of probability, this has all kinds of technical problems. But in practice, it works pretty well. We can call this finite frequentism. In the case of me dying of cancer, the question is, what collective am I a member of? Am I a member of all males between the age of 20 and 40? How about all males between the age of 20 and 80? How about all human beings? How about all human beings between a height of 6'1½" and 6'1½". What about, put some specification here that nails down the collective to just include me. All of those are arguably valid collectives, and they have radically different relative frequencies. And so basically the frequentist ends up saying there's no unique definition of what the probability that I will die of cancer next year is. And if you don't give me a collective, there's no definition at all. We cannot address that question. Probability is not to be used there. Bayesian says, sure, I can use that. It's 3/4. And he goes for a beer. Why not? I can say anything I want. Okay, so now I've started parodying the Bayesians, right? The criticism of Bayesians is that it's just a statement of belief.
It depends on what kind of background. So a Bayesian says, given this background of knowledge which I have, I give this probability. If I have a different background, I will give a different probability. So from that point of view, it's very similar to the choice of a collective.
Yes.
So it's not just whimsical. I say a number, that's a probability. It's more than that.
So the weakest form of Bayesianism holds that the probability is nothing but a belief. And if that's you know, your Ten Commandments get boiled down to one commandment written on a stone tablet, which is probabilities are degrees of belief. Well, let's say 3/4 and go for beer. Therefore, all sane Bayesians start putting more conditions on their probabilities. Just as the frequentists relax their tenets, Bayesians, you know, tend to start from a there's no absolute rule as to what probabilities they assign. Now, all thinking Bayesians apply one more level of constraint, which is coherence. Right? I mentioned this before. It's that there have to be certain relationships between probabilities. And there are at least two different ways of deriving these constraints. An example of a constraint is if I say that the probability of the coin coming up heads is 1, I cannot also say the probability of the coin not coming up heads is 1. That's just nonsensical. That's lack of coherence. And I could say those words, but gods of Bayesianism, like Bruno Di Finetti, and what was Cox's first name, Chris? Richard Cox, would say, ah, you're being an idiot. And formally, I can state you being an idiot as, in Cox's case, you are violating certain very obvious rules. In Di Finetti's case, I am going to take you to the cleaners at the track, baby. So these are the two ways of deriving coherence. So the Di Finetti reference is to an argument called the Dutch book argument, which I'm just going to dump on Chris completely for when he comes up to bat, that says that if you assign your probabilities incoherently, for instance, you assign probability 1 to two different events, then if you believe those probabilities, then you would bet at certain odds. And I can make you, I'm a Dutch bookie now, I can't speak Dutch, sorry. And I can assign a bet that you, according to your beliefs, would accept. You'd say, oh boy, I'm so happy to make this bet, and you lose your shirt. Not most of the time, not with high probability, every single time. Actually, I make several bets with you, and you just lose. So that's what Bruno Di Finetti says about, you know, assigning probabilities stupidly. Once we have coherence, then, in principle, the Bayesian is free to assign their probabilities however they want. Then we start stacking other common sense restrictions on how reasonable Bayesians assign their probabilities. So within this probabilities are beliefs school, the oldest, in fact, this is the oldest consistent account of probability, period, comes from Laplace. And to some degree before him, Pascal and Fermat, big names in mathematics. And this is called classical probability. It's classical Bayesian probability. Essentially boiled down, it's the principle of indifference, which says that if there's no reason to choose between n different events, then you should assign equal probabilities to them. And what these guys meant was you should bet equally on them, because these analyses came specifically out of addressing the gambling debts of French noblemen. So these were prescriptive rules. This is not, well, you know, in theory, equal probabilities would exist or something. This is, unless you're an idiot, you bet equal amounts, Chevalier, do whatever your name is. I think that's a quote from Pascal. So probability now becomes the inverse of how many possible equally plausible events there are. If the events are not equally plausible, if there's something that breaks this symmetry, so the more sophisticated notion of the principle of indifference is if there's a symmetry group on events, and that group is transitive, it allows you to map any event into any other event, then you should assign equal probabilities. And this is a more powerful general form.
Can you give an example of that?
Of which?
The symmetry that you're talking about.
Suppose that I am making a bet on what point will show up on a manifold. Then I make my bets about regions on that manifold. So we can think of a roulette wheel, right? It's a manifold, but it's chopped up into regions. Mm-hmm. But even if there were no physical dividers between that, how do I assign probabilities to the different triangles on the roulette wheel? One way of doing it is observing that there's a U1 symmetry that allows me to map any infinitesimal wedge into any other infinitesimal wedge. And if I can then argue that that symmetry group is relevant, that I don't know anything about that symmetry group, right? So indifference becomes ignorance. I say, it's been spun, it's been twirled. Well, that means I don't know anything about which group element was applied. Bang, I know that I should assign equal probabilities to every infinitesimal wedge and therefore to every finite wedge. It doesn't tell me jack about what relative probabilities I should assign to inner and outer sections of the roulette wheel. I don't have a symmetry group there. So this is the oldest form of Bayesian probability. Yes?
So is this principle of indifference, is this saying in terms of the roulette wheel that the best odds of me winning are for me to assign equal probability everywhere, or that I don't do any worse by assigning equal probabilities everywhere than I would using some other scheme?
I'm not sure what Laplace would have said to this. You're asking about not just... The answer to your question depends on how your odds are actualized, what actions you take based on the odds that you assign. And it's actually going to depend on the exact betting game. But if the betting game is set up properly, then the answer is your expected payoff is highest if you assign uniform probability to all the squares. Any other assignment, you'll expect to win less money. Now, I made this comment earlier about mathematics being hermetically sealed. Theories of probability are frequently hermetically sealed as well. The argument I just made, I slipped in a word, you expect. The Bayesian probabilities can be consistent. It's hard to avoid making them consistent with solipsism, right? Every statement is about, well, I believe that this is going to happen. And so I believe that when I bet this way, this is going to happen, et cetera, et cetera. The only way out of solipsism is to prove that there's something that's not just your belief, but something that will always happen. And the Dutch book is an example of this. It says, this is not about you believe that you'll win more money. It's about you're always going to lose money if you screw up a Dutch book and assign incoherent probabilities. Getting out of the potential circularity trap of saying, you should assign probabilities this way because you expect such and such, right? As opposed to because such and such will actually happen, is hard, but possible. I'll talk more about that next time. But Laplace would have simply said, there's a symmetry, apply the principle of indifference. Don't apply it because you're going to make more money. Apply it because it's mathematically right. It's a principle. It's not grounded on anything. It's a principle. So subjective Bayesian probability, I've essentially just described. A subjective Bayesian statement is, my probability, not necessarily the probability, we could say the probability, but what I really mean is my probability of this coin coming up heads is 1/2, because I don't see any reason to prefer heads to tails. On the other hand, if Cosman had flipped that particular coin 100 times in the past, and it always came up tails, based on his experience, he might apply different probabilities. That's okay. It's a tolerance scheme. The criticism of Bayesianism is, well, there's no content. It's too tolerant. So why Bayesianism? Well, because it's more powerful. Harold Jeffreys writes in the introduction to his textbook on probability, and Jeffreys is a Bayesian, my objection to current statistical theory, and he's talking about frequentism here, is not so much the way it's used as to the fact that it limits its scope at the outset in such a way that it can't state the questions asked or the answers to them within the language that it provides for itself. And this is what I was trying to give a flavor of earlier. It must either appeal to a feature of ordinary language that it has declared to be meaningless, or else produce arguments within its own language that do not bear inspection. So I didn't give you examples of must either appeal to a feature of ordinary language that it has declared to be meaningless. For those who want to know, this is applied to frequentist statements about relative probabilities. Statements like, almost certainly, if you sample a coin, a fair coin, enough times, you'll get close to 50-50 relative frequencies. To which the critical mathematician says, what do you mean, almost certainly? And what do you mean, close to? Is it impossible that I could get all heads, even if it was a fair coin? So this is what Jeffreys is referring to when he says features of ordinary language that cannot be defined, or you produce arguments within the language of frequentism that simply don't hold water, like saying, it has to be practically big enough. So this is sort of the motivation for the Bayesian view. More recently, so what I've stated is ancient Bayesianism, classical probability, which is pretty weak. It's applied to uniformly distributed events where you have some kind of a principle of indifference you can apply. The Bayesianism was cast into the outer hells by Fischer, von Mises, Jerzy Neumann, you know, a cadre of frequentists in the late 1800s and early 20th century. And it started getting revived in beginning like the 1920s. And subjective Bayesianism of various flavors throve through the mid 20th century, but was still deprecated among statisticians. Objective Bayesianism is the thing that I want to briefly conclude with here. The essential idea of objective Bayesianism is that, yes, belief is, probability is about your beliefs, but you can put enough sensible constraints on it by saying that you're rational, you're utility maximizing, and then you have not only coherent constraints, but also, I didn't put this in here, you have further constraints on the best course of action that lead to pretty constrained, sensible probabilistic beliefs. And I'll talk more about this next time. The last form of Bayesianism is really just a flavor variant on the others. This is a bit more concrete. And this is my personal favorite. This is basically what I believe. That, this is a stupid name. It's called pygnistic Bayesian probability. If you really want to meet people at a bar, tell them you're a pygmist. yes, probability is about your beliefs. But beliefs are no longer airy-fairy things, right? Oh, I believe this, I believe that, I believe in crystals and energy. Beliefs are evinced by actions. I don't care what you say you believe, I care what you do. And so Leonard Savage, for instance, was sort of an early proponent of this, under a different name, on a paper called On the Elicitation of Personal Probabilities, where he basically said how to determine what your beliefs are based on what you do. And this view is the right one, and it has strong connections with decision theory, operationalism, and predictive inference. And one of the big things that I'm going to talk about on Thursday is statistical inference, because we have pretty much exhausted what we can say about probability without getting more philosophical than I think is really productive. So I'm going to turn and I'm going to talk about probability's evil twin, statistical inference, which has to do with figuring out what the world is about, actually doing experiments or imagining doing experiments. And that's where you start to see the concrete difference between different schools of probability. And I thank you for bearing with me. Feel free to talk to me outside or see you on Thursday.
All right, let's thank Robin. Thank you.